and Sheldon Katz, which was on the archive in January. And it is basically indirectly related to mock modularity and moonshine and so on, by the fact that you sort of there's a reasonable progress in calculating BPS states, and these BPS states, as we know, are related also to representations of this big group. So maybe there's a relation. Also, you will find it relatively familiar because the object like elliptic genus of K3 and other quasi-modular forms will naturally appear in this context, which is sort of interesting. And if you want to have a short form, then you can write me. We have something for Yao's birthday, which is quite short, so you can just read it more easily than in this paper, but it's not on the net. So I will start with some introduction, which is maybe not so familiar to me to you. That is basically closed topological string and BPS states. So this is the first part of the title. So what you what you have here is basically you have to in string theory you have the following problem. I mean, the central object is a map, and in the case of the closed string, is a map from a closed Riemann surface into a target space M, which in our case, for various reasons, will be a Calabi-Yau threefold. And then you sort of want to associate certain generating function to this map, and one is the partition function of type 2 string. So that would be something which depends on this Calabi-Yau manifold, and then is a variational integral over this map, and then there is some oscillating factor, and then there's the action of type 2 string. Here's type 2a. And this will depend on the metric of this Calabi-Yau in principle, and then on some background fields, and of course on this map. And as sort of because this type 2 string theory is supersymmetric, you have localization. And you can write this in terms of an instanton sum. And you can also make a genus expansion, and therefore I introduce the string coupling. And then, as it turns out, this doesn't depend on the details of the metric, but only on the Keller moduli. So this is the string coupling. And that is the Keller moduli. These are Keller moduli. And sometimes we call this also the topological partition function of M. And then, of course, since this is not at all exact, there will be fluctuations, which for now don't play a role. So this is not the full story, but this is, so to say, only a story which has to do with worldsheet instantons. So this basically counts the worldsheet instantons. Now, the people have, of course, analyzed this object in very much in detail. And so let me write this a little bit. I mean, there's this lambda, is the string coupling. I'll write it again because there will be some property that this is actually also related directly to the geometry, which is very interesting. And this allows me to give some all genus results, because there's a genus expansion in the string coupling. But since there is a relation like this, so this would be 2 pi I z, and that z will be actually the elliptic parameter of a quasi-modular form. So the other thing is this scalar parameter, so just let me say it, what it is. So this t, sometimes I make a b, and it's an integrand over a curve class. So so of course this genus G Riemann surface will the image of them will be a particular curve, and you integrate then the Keller form and the B field over this, and that gives you a parameter depending on the size of the curve, essentially. So there is B, as I said, there is a genus expansion behind that. And this genus expansion allows you, for instance, to write this F lambda T as a sum over the genus, runs from 0 to infinity, 2g minus 2. And then you introduce a q beta, which takes care of these curve classes. So beta will be in h2mz. And then there will be some number, which is labeled by g and b. That is called, well, that's the so-called Gromov-Witten invariant. And what is quite remarkable and sort of also shows even more that this has to do with modularity and all these things is that there is an alternative expansion in which this guy become actually integer. So here, this is a rational number, and that has to do with the fact that the that the modulized space of this map is actually a stack, so it's a, sort of an orbifold, so you get certain denominators in these numbers. But there is a rewriting. Actually, I should also have. Oh no, it's okay. So, so there is a classical term which I sort of is the degree zero map. So if beta is zero here, that would be the classical terms. And then there is a rewriting which goes like this. So it is also an M from one to infinity. And now the argument of this sum is an integer invariant. So this one, the nice thing that this is at least in Z. And and then it's multiplied, of course, by this Q beta and by this lambda to the 2G. No, sorry, this is, this becomes now another function of lambda. So it's N of M of Z, where this is actually this Z. And then you get, this is taken to the power 2g minus 2. And now what is this xm? This is defined to be 2 sine of lambda over 2 times m. So, so you see that here the expansion is not integer, but here the expansion is actually integer. And if you want to understand this a little bit better, this property, then maybe you can also appreciate that there is a product form of the Z, which is actually e to the is e to the f. And this product form looks as follows. So you have this beta. Now I don't say where it runs because it's already clear. And then you have a sum over m from 1 to infinity. And then you get 1 minus q beta ym to the m times n. And this is now the same numbers that appears here. These are this integer numbers. So this is n naught beta. And this y is just the exponent of lambda. And then this this is a relatively big product. So let me write it like g from 1 to infinity. So the genus 0 part is taken care of by this factor, but then comes the higher genus part. And then it's L from 0 to 2g minus 2. And then 1 minus q beta. And then this has a slightly more complicated exponent. And then there is here is a big, well, let me write this one. This is an exponent. And this exponent is actually quite involved. So this exponent is minus 1 to the g plus l. And then there is a choose function. So it's 2g choose l and then ng beta. So the essential thing is that this whole product form will be essentially also determined by this NB. by these integer numbers. And there's also a reason why people like this product form these days a lot, because there's also, so being rational is terrible, being integer is a little bit better, but better would be, it would be actually positive integers, because then there would be some state counting. And there's a refinement of this formula which leads to a state counting. So I don't write it now because we don't use it too much. Leads to new integers, which are actually n, j left, j right. So this is given by some spin representation beta, which is actually closely, this is basically is a weighted sum of these guys. So here, so this is like an index, and that is like an individual contribution of this thing. So so what is the aim actually for many years, I would say, for at least for me, is to calculate this function for a non-trivial Calabi-Yau exactly. So there's there's one goal, which is, as you see, is interesting from a mathematical point of view because of the Gromov-Witten invariance. It is also interesting from these guys. So actually, these guys, I should also say, they are, so to say, closely related to the Pandhari-Pande-Thomas invariance of stable pairs. So essentially, the information is the same. And they are also integers, not positive integers, but integers. So the goal is to calculate z of m for m non-trivial Calabi-Yau. Elliptically fibered. So that's all. Yeah, I mean, they are basically count, also called BPS invariants, where you can understand that there is this SU2 left and SU2 right action, and that, so it's, I mean, historical, basically, this guys, you can also say Gopakuma-Wafa invariants, because they named them first, and these guys, they also mentioned this possibility already of the refinement, so...
Where do you get an SU2 times SU2 in a compact form?
That's a good question, but that's also the reason why I want to stick to the elliptic fibration case, because you have at least a broken U1 in the elliptic fiber.
Oh,
the
What? It's obvious from that.
You're taking SO4 and find
it. It's after the Calabi-Yau threefold, so a massive particle has an
SO4. Yeah, the SO4.
Yeah, but I mean, the Yeah, but I mean the for the definition of this five-dimensional index, you need this additional U1, right? And at least in Nekrasov partition function, this U1 is related to an isometry of the Calabi-Yau, which you don't have. So therefore, it's a little bit more subtle. But anyway.
So wait, you're disagreeing with then I don't understand. I thought
I agree that there must be a twisting in five dimension. I'm not totally agree, but we can talk later about it. Okay, so so anyway, what are elliptic Calabi-Yau threefolds? So, well, let's explain the second part of the title. So elliptic Calabi-Yau threefolds. So why don't we start with a trip? Yes?
Just make sure I understand. Where are you?
I mean, this is, I will not talk at all about refined invariants. So, so I will tell you, yeah. What do you don't understand? Okay.
They both have
walk-up.
Yeah, whether they're indices or not.
Well, I mean, it's, I can give you an example where on a Calabi-Yau, oh, sorry. Where on a Calabi-Yau threefold, you can, I mean, basically this depends on the Kähler moduli, these guys. I can give you an example where by changing the hypermultiplet moduli space, this thing jumps, this n, j, and right. But the small n doesn't jump. And this sort of, I mean, I basically have big sympathy of Greg with Greg that he thinks these things exist and are fine, but I don't want to talk about them. But anyway, so now we go to an elliptic Calabi-Yau, and and so to say, I use a little bit of physics notation. So if you have an n equal 4 in 4 dimension, then there's one nice example, which of course also is obvious from the mathematical point of view, is just k3 times t2. And then there is actually an answer which was given long ago by Katz, Klemm, and Wafa. Basically based, it was based on the formula for the heterotic string by Dijkgraaf, Verlinde, and Verlinde. And I can tell you roughly what it is. So, well, you take this f t, and then you make the following definition, 1 over j, f j. And now the f j have some nice formula. So the f j have this formula x j z to the minus 2. This is this guy I defined over there. And then it's a product over k greater than 0, n greater equal than 0, sorry, n also greater than 0, m greater or equal than 0, and l. And all these things are integers. And then it's something which should remind you of this t2, as is pretty obvious. And then 1 minus y j q n, 1 minus j minus 1 q n, and then is 1 over 1 minus p n q m y l j. And then is this coefficient c, which I write a little bit. So this coefficient c, we will see later. So this is m times n. So it depends actually at the same discriminant that Jeff was mentioning. So at the same combination of this quadratic form. And then it is, so I have written it in terms of L, so that should be L. So this is this function, and now that's right. It's here and it's here because this is j, and here also.
L times j.
Yes, L times j. And then you will also know a function which is actually a Siegel modular form, or actually at least closely related to the Siegel modular form phi 10. And just for convenience, I multiply this guy. Often it's called without the set hat, but when I call the set hat, then I multiply it by some degree 10 weight 1 form, and that makes the coefficients a little bit easier, because then it has this usual expansion near, so to say, the degeneration limit of this torus, where it is phi m tz pm. And then to make it, so to say, obvious that this has much things to do with things that you know. So there is, for instance, this also is related to the elliptic genus of the K3. So this is, or more precisely, to the elliptic genus of a symmetric product of K3s times pm. And now if you expand it out, then up to some factors, this is actually this one. So it's basically this factor with the sum. Should I write this again? It's basically that this guy, this phi 10, has a product form that you probably all will know. And in this product form comes exactly this factor here. Now we get here. We get basically, of course, I have to pull out this out of the product and forget about it. But that's all. Okay, so that is the story for this trivial case. And in some sense, the whole lecture is about generalizing that guy to situations where where I want to replace the K3 I basically want to make a non-trivial vibration here. And that means here, of course, you have no choice. Since you have no singular fibers, you have to take C1 equals zero manifold. But if you allow singular fibers, it's like allowing the seven brains, then you have negative contribution to the Euler number. So you can fiber it over some positive churn glass object. And that will be, in my case, mostly a P2. Well, that fits the bill, certainly. So... Yes.
So, if you want to interpret this as some topological function, so in the equation f j equal to the rest, on the right hand side is the p variable. So, what do you mean?
Sorry, do you mean what are the classes?
So f.
So the string coupling is literally in there. Right, and then there are two other classes, P and Q. One is the class of the torus, and one is the class of the K3. And the K3, so to say, has only one class because it doesn't matter. There's no zeta function involved. It doesn't matter. It just matter what C squared is of the curve. So therefore, it's just this one. Okay, so so as I said, we want to go to n equal 2 from the physics speak, and that means we have to consider a non-trivial vibration of an elliptic curve over a two-dimensional base. So that was the K3, but now it's non-trivial.
So when V2 has more curve classes, then you would need more variables in such a curve.
Sure.
And you have them?
Many. Yeah. I mean, there's a generalization. This P2 is just for convenience, but if you have, for instance, a Fano variety let's say, blow-up of P2 in up to 8 points, then you have more classes in the base, but the formulas work essentially.
Sorry, why have 8?
Hmm?
Why 8 points?
Well, then you get an almost Fano, because then C1 becomes, so to say, there's a curve which is not positive in that. So that's also an interesting example that then you have this called half K3, and you have a very nice structure in that. So anyway, let me tell you a little bit what this elliptic vibration is. So this elliptic vibration is given as a constraint like this, where u is actually coordinates on the base on this B2, and then you have a g of u. And there is an important function, of course, which tells you when this fiber degenerates, and that is something like f to the 3 minus 27 g to the 2. And now there is, so to say, a big work on this by Kodaira. So if the basis, let's say, is this, and you have in the basis some divisor, then Kodaira basically tells you, you only have to know how this f, g, and delta vanishes at this divisor, and he will tell you what kind of a singular fiber you get. And that helps me, so to say, to organize what in which generality I can solve the problem. So let me say what Kodaira tells you. So classification of singular elliptic fibers. So basically what he tells you is you look at the order of, if this is, let's say, z equal 0, then you would look at the powers of z, how this function vanishes at z. And he tells you that if I make such a table, then of course we can have things like this, whatever it is. But as long as this guy is actually 0, then nothing happens. So that's a regular fiber. And then if this is 1, and this could be 0, then you have an I1 fiber. So he calls them actually I0, I1. Then you have a nodal fiber. But it's not hard to see that this nodal fiber doesn't make the Calabi-Yau singular. So that's So M is still smooth. And then he gives many, many cases, very interesting cases, in particular for F3, of course. And there's one case that I, this is the maximal case I stop with. This is like this. And then this is the type 2 star fiber. And then you have an affine E8 group. But that would mean that your Calabiau has actually now 8 new classes. So if I do this over P2, I would get 8 new classes in order to resolve the fiber. So in this talk, I don't want to do that. So I want to have a situation where I have only this, at most, this E1 fiber. And there's, in fact, another work that I did with Hagegat, Lockhart, and Wafa. So today, only I0, I1. And then there is other work, let's say, by Hagegat, Lockhart, Wafa, and myself. So that's last year. So here we deal, for instance, with the D4 fiber. So the philosophy is maybe solve the regular case or the E1 case globally, and then in this case also this was locally analyzed, then clue in what happens at this local places. So that will eventually solve the full theory. But today we only deal with the regular case. And also this paper that I mentioned, they go away. Okay. This guy. So the paper that I mentioned is only a local analysis. So you have still to clue them in. But I think that's possible.
I'll bring just a dumb question. How long is this an A model?
So far it's an A model.
The A model doesn't care what the complex structure is for the approximation.
So that's right.
Why are you talking about the...
No, no. I mean, in this question to Greg, it does care, because it's not only a model. But generally now, of course, we use mirror symmetry and relate this to modularity of the mirror and so on. So everything that is said to be about modularity basically comes from the mirror.
So this is what you're worried about on the mirror side?
Yes. Well, I mean, this discussion is general. I don't have to say anything. Yeah. So now we have this concrete example, which, so to say, stays with us for a little bit. So let me just tell you what it is. So we have this example, and it's just for convenience, because it's the simplest thing work in great generality, as we have already checked for a second paper. So what is then? So what is M? So M is something like X is a coordinate in P 1, 1, 1, 6, 9. So this one, so to say, is a weighted projective space. This one are the U parameters. This one would be X. So this and this is Y. And then you can see the whole Calabiau is given by a degree 18 constraint on these variables. And it's 0. And there's no question that this is of this form, because the weights work out this way. So it's an elliptic vibration. And then this thing has a Kähler parameters. And these Kähler parameters, there will be 2 of them. And then you can also calculate the complex structure deformation. There will be 272. And then Let me describe you a little bit the geometry, because this is important. So now you have curves. So what can these curves be? There is a hyperplane class in P2, which I want to call H. And then there's a dual divisor, which I want to call, so it's a dual divisor in M. I want to call this big H. And then there is there is the elliptic fiber, the class of the elliptic fiber. Let's call this L. And then there is a dual divisor. Let's call this big L. And now if I want to have a curve, I mean, I want to tell you what is this class in H2M. Then I have these two classes. So basically this beta that I always talk about, this would be DE, so it's two numbers lies in a lattice, and this lattice is so we have a curve, so C is a curve, and then I want to have its degree, and this is C intersected with H, and then DB is C intersected with L. So that is this beta. So we have this lattice, and then I introduce a little bit more convenient variables. So I introduce an e to the 2 pi I TE. And actually, since this TE is so much related to the modulus of the elliptic curve in the dual, I call this also tau, because your people are used to it. And then I have a q, a big q, that gives me the base degrees. So that is something like q to the 3/2. So it's a bit shifted. And then it's e to the 2 pi I TB. And what the T were is maybe here, right? So these are the T's. OK, so then comes, now I organize this final result that I want in terms of the space and fiber degree. So let me do that. So basically, I want to write my C topological of M, but I want to write it as a sum over dB, because I have this base degree. So dB equals 0 to infinity. And then I want to write it as set dB. And this will be dependent on tau. And it will depend on the string coupling, which anyway I call Z. And then this whole thing, of course, gets a QDB. So now comes the main conjecture of our paper of HKK15, and that's quite beautiful, actually. So ZdB is a meromorphic Jacobi form. And a meromorphic Jacobi form can be written as a ratio between two Jacobi forms, weak or holomorphic Jacobi form. But it turns out that the numerator, and that's the second thing, and the last thing in the title, is a weak Jacobi form. And the denominator, out which you cannot say anything, because, well, I mean, for instance, nothing bounds the numerator if you doesn't say anything. That is actually also a weak Jacobi form, but it has poles only at the torsion points. The zero. At the torsion points. And I should have said maybe something which also tells you how this thing will work in general. So you can, for instance, take the second Chern class and multiply it with H, and that gives 36. The 36 will actually appear now in this ansatz in a very prominent way. So I will give you the formula in a second, but I mean, let me mention a couple of nice points. So that one is maybe the most important point. So this is of course the elliptic argument of the weak Jacobi form. That will correspond to the string coupling. But we will see. I will tell you. Corresponds to the elliptic arc. Okay, and now I have this question, so let me become concrete. So you can arrange it by multiplying with eta to the 36 dB to be of weight zero, this whole guy. And then the index unfortunately grows relatively fast. But anyway, so this is the first formula. So it's this H, this conjecture. So what is, so the dB equals zero is a little bit special, so don't worry about it now. So we have it like this, dB, Pz, and then we have a eta to the 36 dB, and then you have this very nice denominator. So S runs from 1 to dB, and then it's phi minus 2, 1 T ZZ. And phi dB has index m, which is 3/2 over dB, dB minus 1, dB plus 4. What? This is normal. One third, yeah. This usually I write what I meant, but not always. And then the weight. What? Yeah. So this is a special case for this reason, and. But I mean, what is not so, well, I mean, actually, I want to compare these formulas with the formula that had expansion for this 1 over pi 10. Then, of course, you have a similar formula, but the index grows linearly. So that is a little bit bad here for this general theory, but it's a fact, so what can I do? And that is 16 dB. So so from that follows, because this is the weight and this is the... This is the weight and this is the index. So from this follows that ZDB has a weight zero. Yes, and then the index. Well, the index is basically can be given by a formula which is a little bit more general than the formula which follows directly from this. So it's basically the curve class, especially you take the curve class, at the canonical bundle of the basis, and that gives you the index of this form. And this formula, for instance, does not work only for P2, but it works also for Hirzebruch surfaces as the base and so on.
So, like the exact original topological string, lambda was the genus counting for
right. G minus 2. That's right. Yeah. At least in this example, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I don't know really well, but I mean, in some sense, it could be that this answer that this is like this is a little trivial, because in some sense, how does a genus G Riemann surface look? It looks like something which wraps the base and then wraps a couple of times the fiber. And of course, the times that it wraps the fiber is related to this elliptic parameter. So in some sense, all these genus G curves are something like, if you want to a simple picture, like an ass with ears. So there are many ears, and that is basically the genus. And so maybe this is not so, well, it's for probably for all elliptic vibrations, but maybe it's not so universal. But anyway, so the so these are nice all genus formulas. This is the canonical class of the base. And that is the curve class in the base. So so let me now do something which I think maybe will bore you. That would be a recapitulation of the ring of weak Jacobi forms. That is a theory which has been developed by Eichler and Sagier. And the upshot is that this ring is finitely generated by four elements. And one of these elements is twice the elliptic genus of the K3. And another element is actually closely related to this torus factor that I had in my formula. So this, in some sense, you can think these elements anyway are there already for the trivial example. So what I'm doing is I'm combining them a little bit more non-trivial. And I think half. Is phi minus, I mean, A is half the elliptic, yeah. Mm-hmm. Never mind, it's a ring. Okay, so then, so this, as I said, this is maybe embarrassing. I don't know how embarrassing this can be. But, so what is the Jacobi form? So basically, I call this with phi, and then it's a map from the upper half plane. So this is the modular parameter parameter, and then times c. That's the elliptic parameter. So this is this tau and c elliptic into the complex numbers, and what?
So just going back to that. So the numerator and the denominator have independent, they're intrinsically defined.
Well, I mean, the point is, I mean, this guy is fixed.
The denominator.
I believe it's fixed. And the numerator, of course, can be, so to say, with enough information, can be built from this ring. That's the idea. So that's not universal at all. There were some papers of the elliptic genus of gauge linear sigma model, which suggested that. So there are a couple of physical papers which let us try these answers, basically. So I don't have a too good. And I have also to say, I mean, basically, we have checked this for dB equal 5. Now, since this is a number theoretical thing, it could be easily that it's wrong for dB equal 7 or something. Up to five. But then there are also formulas, let's say, for dB equal 1. There are, so to say, single conjectures. We specify this one. And there is already, Jim Bryan and Martin Cole, they have proven that formula. So there is something, certainly something correct. So maybe something wrong with the general formula. I don't know. Well, I mean, the poles, I mean, many poles actually have to be, I will tell a little bit, many poles have actually been subtracted. So if you, in this expression, you can subtract poles. Well, I mean, basically, you can arrange this function so that it is the power of a function which appears before. So I will tell you that. I mean, there are some singularities in the set B, which somehow have to be subtracted, actually. Basically, they have to cancel. Yeah. Yeah, it's a fewer pole than it appears in the total sum. If you specify, let's say, a particular value of QB, right? And then there can be subtractions of this. I mean, let me give you a couple of. You will see this when I give you the first two. So anyway, so what are the defining properties? So the defining properties is if you let tau go to tau gamma equals a tau plus b c tau plus d with a b c d in SL2Z, and you let at the same time got Z, let's map this to Z, which is Z over C tau plus D, then you have a modularity and this quasi-periodicity, which actually then defines this. So you have modularity. So what is this? So if you take this function and you insert this this arguments, then this is up to a phase the same, and this phase is given, well, is the weight, of course, but, and then the phase. So this is the weight k, and then there comes the phase, which tells you what is the index. C tau plus d. So that is the modularity property. Let's call this M. And then there is the quasi-periodicity. So that tells you if you take the if you take this second argument and you add with integers this combination, then this is up to a phase the same. And again, the index appears here in this phase. So that is this quasi-periodicity. And this thing is basically all that you know, and it also defines the weight and the so that defines weight k and index m. And then there is another property that tells you that this essentially only depends on this discriminant, the one that Jeff was mentioning. So there are further properties. And that is a Fourier expansion. And this Fourier expansion is written, so TZ, and then it's CNR QNYR. And then you have that this CMR is can be written as a dependence on another function where it only depends on delta mod r, and this delta is this discriminant. It was called d before. And then, so this whole thing depends on r only mod 2m, where m is the index. And then there are a couple of qualifiers. So so these guys are called holomorphic. So that is if this this depends on whether these are zero. So there should be zero unless for m n greater than r, and then they are called cuspial if this is like this, and here is now a strict. And then they are weak, and that's the one that we need actually. If this is zero, unless that's just a condition on n, so this is greater than zero. And then comes the big theorem of this gentleman, which tells you that this ring of modular forms is generated by these four elements, which two of them have no index at all. These are the Eisenstein series E6 and E4. And the other one has index 0, which is one half of the elliptic genus of the K3 in the normalization that Jeff likes. And then the next one is somehow related to this factor that I had from the torus. So let me, so there is a theorem, Eichler and Sagge, and they say that the ring of weak Jacobi forms is generated by, so he calls them A, which is phi minus 1, B, which is this one, and then Q, which is E4, the Eisenstein series, and R, which is E6. Okay, so that is that generates that. And now, with this information, I can make my conjecture precise. I mean, let me just mention that A is also one half of the elliptic genus of K3. What? Sorry, B. The guy of, yeah, certainly. And then A is something which is minus, so that you can compare with the formula of KKV, and you will see it's almost the same, minus QN minus epsilon minus 1 QN 2, and then it's 1 minus, so this is this looks more or less like the torus Goetzel formula to the 4. Okay, so that and the other Eisenstein series, I think you know anyway, so I don't write them. So now I can make the I can make the series of this HKK of our conjecture series of HKK1 conjectures. So they are now relatively simple to write, at least the first one. So this phi 1, if the degree is 1, this is minus 1 over 48 Q 31 Q cubed minus 313 R. And that's what I meant with canceling. So if you think about it, then you can, so this next one is actually involves now something with an index. But it's phi 1. And if you think about what happens in the irreducible curve contribution, that actually cancels the pole of this one, this factor. And then there's a complicated factor, which I don't, I just want to give you an expression that there are, so to say, some huge numbers involved. And they don't cancel for some strange reason. But then it's B A Q to the 7 R plus, plus, plus. So it's a complicated expression. And as I said, so what is the what is the sort of the result of our analysis? I mean, that's right. That has no index. So this is probably here from this formula obvious because it's DB minus 1. Okay, so then, but the other, they have all complicated index. Okay, and then, so as I said, so this we have, so to say, explicit. Yeah, I will tell you. This is a complicated story. I mean, it would be much better, I would have something which is analogous to pi 10. That would be nice. Then I could just expand it. And I think it has to do something to do with a modular form of genus 3. I mean, that would be my best guess. But I have no, I mean, that would be very beautiful. But here, this results are best, so to say, they have various sources, but the most powerful source is actually to solve the topological string the way that BCOV, with the direct integration that we developed and so on, solved it. So that comes actually to this point. So what are the checks and or how do you obtain it?
Yeah. So if there are four things then if I write as a genus expansion and there's more than two folds, then it looks like there's many genus.
Yeah, that's why they should be cancelled.
So there are, so does ZBP have folds in Z or not?
Yeah, yeah, it has things like 1 over Z, whatever. And these guys, I have to be taken care of, yeah. Well, I don't give you the, I mean, just work it out. I mean, basically, you have to subtract them. At the end,
yeah.
If you go to the, not consider Z, but F, then you can easily see that they can't. You take the exponential, and then you look in F and make sure that there are no negative powers in lambda, as you say, exactly as you say.
But this is happening for each phi 1, phi 2 separately, or did it?
No, it doesn't happen for each phi 1, phi 2 separately, because if you take the exponential, then you get again dB, and so it works. No, because, as I said, No, I don't have to. If I would have to, then I would have a problem. But as I said, if you take the log of this expression, then of course various expressions come double. And then if the poles are right in the individual expression, then it works. I'll just take the log of these things. I mean, this is basically the exponential. Now take the log. Then phi 1 comes up two times, once with phi squared and once with phi 2, and then it comes. That's what it does. Okay, good. That is certainly true, but let me somehow wrap up because I think I should do this. So for instance, Matthias asked how we obtain this and why we are sure that's maybe correct. So basically, there's a check. This is checks plus. Well, this is derivation plus checks because you need a few coefficients and then you check more. So that is now a direct integration. Basically, of BCOV equation. And then there's something, maybe you remember from other talks that once I maybe gave that you have this conifold, you have to have boundary conditions, you have the conifold gap, and then you have B, you have actually an involution symmetry, which is very interesting in this case. Maybe I say a few words at the end. And then you have C, this Castelnuovo bounds. Novo bounds. Plus stable pair computations. And if you sort of say combine this methods, then so using A, B, C, D, you can get all these NG, DB, DE. So for dB less than 20 and G dE arbitrary, or you can get them for G less than 139 and dE dB arbitrary. Okay, so then.
What?
Well, that basically means that there's a certain cusp behavior, which is, so to say, comes from a extension of this argument of Strominger, what happens at this black hole. And then you can see that they have a cuspial behavior. Basically, there's a large leading power and then no subleading powers. So it's basically like a cusp form, if you like. It looks very much like a cusp form at the corner. Okay, so I think I should. So I have now many things which I cannot talk about, but that is often when you give a blackboard talk. So let me just. On the other hand, maybe it's nice to hear a blackboard. So let me mention two things. So one thing is, you can ask yourself why this thing has to be quasi-modular. And we investigated this this question, and there is a paper by Witten from 93 or so. It's called the wave function transformation of the topological string partition function. And now this. Which function?
What is quasi-modular about it?
Oh, what's quasi-modular about it? I said weak Jacobi forms. Sometimes I say quasi-modular, right? Yeah, that's a good point. That I can explain in all details. I mean, that's actually something, that. Well, look at this modular property that I erased. And then, not yet. This was not there. This was on another blackboard. So this modular property had this phase factor, right? Up to this phase factor, this thing was modular, like a weight K form, right? So now, define the following. Tz equals e to the pi 3 m squared e 2 phi km Tz. So this guy, by the transformation of e 2, actually makes this guy modular, because it does cancel this phase factor. So when you want to make relation to the holomorphic anomaly equation and all this, then you would go two steps. You first make it quasi-modular, and then you make it eventually modular again by making E2 modular by going to E2 hat, which sort of brings in the unholomorphicity. But this guy is a weight K modular form. And that follows simply from this formula M that I erased, and this formula that everybody knows, that if I take E of tau gamma, that this is CT plus D. So this is almost like a K2 form, but then it has this term which actually cancels this guy. And that. It's maybe there, yeah. Could be. Beautiful. So if you just see what cancels this one, so I have to actually put. Modulus and typos. I would be very disappointed, but maybe you're right. anyway, good. So anyway, so this follows from this and this. So then, so if you this so to say cancels the phase, and then this other guy is this modular, and that's how all this unholomorphicity comes in this business. And it is actually quite nice. So it plays actually this. I didn't want to talk about it, but this plays a role in the proof that I want to mention. There is this thing that the wave function transforms metaplectically, that Z transforms metaplectically, and in this formula. There is a formula which looks like a heat equation. So this looks like this, has the string coupling in it, and then it has the Weyl-Patterson metric in it, and then it has some covariant derivatives. I write it just like Witten writes it in his paper, without too much explanation, but then you can at least look at the paper. So you see, this thing, and here I forgot the most important thing that I want to talk about. CA B and C. So now you you see the following. I mean, basically, if you have an elliptic vibration, then this simplifies to the defining a differential equation for a weak Jacobi form. And that is actually the reason that it has to be a weak Jacobi form on elliptic vibrations. Of course, you don't know anything about the denominator, or this can be for a meromorphic form, for that matter. But this certainly is the explanation that this happens, this structure. And this also makes sure that it will happen for all elliptic vibrations. So there's nothing wrong to expect. And then, of course, at the very end, we also calculated, we improved. Yeah, but this is this ring is very different because this ring has not a string coupling in it. So these results are much stronger because they have the string coupling in it, where Yamaguchi and Yao has works order and order in the string coupling.
Can you understand their result also from this kind of equation?
I can understand it anyway, but not from here. I mean, it's not. I mean, basically, it has to do with the holomorphic anomaly equation and so on, but. I mean, the simplest analogy is actually that the propagator that they find is like E2 hat. And so, I mean, that has a very simple specialization to the elliptic curve. Okay, so let me just wrap up with some picture. I mean, there's also mathematical interest in that, and that is this Castelnuovo bound. So it's of course a very good question when this Donaldson-Thomas invariance or this BPS invariance vanish. And these vanishing theorems are investigated in mathematics. And we find also that is mainly Sheldon found. He found a vanishing theorem. So he found that N GB is actually zero if DE is greater than 3 dB minus 1. This is an asymptotic behavior, so it looks a little bit different near small values of dE and dB. So this is like a formula like this, d minus 4. So then it vanishes, and if you, so you have sort of give you an expression. Of course, now I can make this. Could make plots about this BPS invariance to arbitrary genus, but I don't want to. I just tell you that, let's say, if we have the genus, let's say 10, 20, 30, 40, and then we increase the DE, then we have, so to say, curves which for, so this would be for DB equal 1. And then these curves are, so to say, relatively nice. So they start like this, and then they go like this for dB equal 2. And then these people provide with a lot of choke. And then it goes like dB equal 3, and so on. And so to say, here, these guys are zero, I mean, for these values. And actually, these are also quite non-trivial checks on the answers. I mean, the answers already has. I mean, if the answer is of this form, this is quite natural that it happens. And then with this A, B, C, D, I could say that, I mean, as Matthias was asking, so basically, okay. I mean, let's say for dB equal 1 is quite good. Then you have to find two coefficients, but you have about 100 checks from the explicit. And that goes a little bit down. But even for dB equal 5, we have something like 10 checks. So I would say these formulas are correct. I'm not sure whether this formula is in this generality correct, but I sort of believe it. And yeah, that's about it.